The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slip or Trip, The $1 Million Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida. Hello and welcome to the inaugural podcast of Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales. My name is Peter Christopher, and joining me is attorney and author Louis M. Ress. Mr. Ress has recently published a fascinating collection of stories, which I might add are all true, of his experiences from over 6 decades of practicing law in South Florida. The book is titled Strange Cases and Wild Tales, and is available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon.com. Louis, I'm sure the first question on most people's minds would be, what motivated you to write and share these stories with the world?
This is the story, the tale of the frozen pussy, that caused me to write a book and to do this podcast. It all happened in Iceland. My wife and I had never been to Iceland. It's not like Greenland. Greenland is icy, and Iceland is green. So it's very interesting. And we travel all over the world. My wife had never been to Iceland. She had this thing in her head to go to Iceland. So we got on a French cruise. In the meantime, we had gone into the major city of Reykjavik, and she is very friendly and loving to her niece, who is the daughter of a deceased sister. And she called up Denise, who was a professional writer and has written books, and she got big advances and things, and went to Wellesley, and she's married to an editor, Chris Fagg. And Chris is an Englishman, and he's a professional editor. And they joined us as our guests for a week in Iceland. And they were running around all day, going out to the waterfalls and the steam baths and the different lagoons and things. And at night, they would come in, and it would be drizzling and cold. And we'd all sit down around the fireplace in the hotel and have a few drinks. And one night, I told the story of the frozen pussy. Well, Chris was falling off the chair, laughing. And Ellen thought it was great, and they said you should put these stories down for posterity. So that's how I came to write the book, and it really was going to be called The Tale of the Frozen Pussy and Other Great Stories. Well, here's the story. I was sitting at my desk. It all started then. It was in my office in Miami, and my secretary buzzed in on the intercom. Mr. Ress, it's Mrs. Burnside on the phone, and she wants to speak to you. It's urgent. Darling, I have to see you right away. This was an attractive dental wife with blue eyes, blonde hair, designer dresses, and her husband was an outstanding member of the Dental Society. She sat down from across my desk and was in obvious distress. It's like a Mike Hammer story. The lace handkerchief was at her eyes. She gave me a man's name, Dr. Wasserman. And then she said, he froze my pussy without my permission. Said, what? What a case! What a case! Her Persian cat, Pussy, had a history of heart problems. She had taken the cat to the vet for a clipping and a bath. Evidently, while the cat was being bathed, it suffered a heart attack and died. Ellie learned of the cat's fate through a very short clipped phone call to the doctor's office. She was told the cat was dead. That was only the receptionist. Your cat died while getting a bath. Do you want us to dispose of the remains, or you may pick them up? The doctor refused to take her phone calls. No doctor, no office manager, no explanation. She faced me. The tears were on her cheeks. The doctor treated me like dirt. At least I want an apology. The story was even more heart-rending. When Ellie went to the vet's office to pick up the remains, the secretary brought out a cold, hard object in a plain, dark plastic bag. My pussy was as hard as a rock. They had frozen her pussy without her permission. No doctor came out to talk to her, no office manager, no explanation, no apology. It's a mistake to freeze a woman's pussy without her permission. She said, what if they sedated my cat without remembering that it had a heart attack? The next thing Ellie learned was that an autopsy could not be performed on a frozen cat. What can the family lawyer do? I tried calling the doctor, Dr. Wasserman. He wouldn't talk to me. I wrote to the doctor. He wouldn't answer me. The last resort was a lawsuit, which I filed in the Dade County Circuit Court with unlimited jurisdiction. An insurance defense firm filed an appearance and the standard motion to dismiss. the judge's administrative assistant issued an order under the judge's name for a lawsuit conference at the judge's chambers with all the parties to be present. The Dade County Courthouse was grand. I don't know if I've told you about it. It was the tallest building south of Atlanta, 17 stories high. The day comes for the hearing, and Ellie and I climb up these gorgeous steps to the courthouse, all marble. And I remember her heels clicking on the marble floor. We went up to the bronze-doored elevator, and it was all engraved in bronze. And we went up to the 11th floor, to the judge's offices. Dr. Wasserman was already there with his attorney. They didn't even say hello. They looked away from us. No eye contact, no discussion, no nothing. The judge's chambers were in a large office with a long table and then a cross table at the end. After a short wait, the secretary ushered us in and we sat on one side of the long table. The doctor, Dr. Wasserman and his attorney were glaring at us from the other side of the table. The judge's high back chair was on a raised platform at the end of the T. He entered, fully robed, from a side door and walked rapidly to his high back chair. He tapped the gavel and he looked at me. "Now what is this all about, Mr. Ress?" I stood up and I pointed my index finger at Dr. Wasserman and I said in a loud voice, "Your Honor, this man froze my client's pussy without her permission." I swear to God, I really said it, I swear. The judge grabbed quickly for his face. His hand covered his mouth. His eyes rolled into his head. His face reddened. He started to cough. He slid down the table, under the table, right under his high back chair. He coughed. He sputtered. He recovered. And he sat up and he leaned over and he said, "Mr. Riss, what do you want?" "An apology, Your Honor. We want an apology." The doctor stood up at the end of the table and shouted, "Never!" The judge slammed the table with his gavel. The noise sounded like a clap of thunder. Bang! The judge stared at the doctor and said, "Apologize now." The doctor says, "I'm sorry." "That's not enough, Your Honor. It's got to be meaningful. He's got to say he's sorry for the way he treated my client." "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. I apologize for the way you were treated. Ellie, is that acceptable to you?" "Yes, it is, Lewis." Case dismissed. What a case. But it wasn't over. What's left? A moral. Never freeze a lady's pussy without her permission. What else is left? My fee. Ellie said, "Lewis, please send me your bill." How do you send a fee in a case like that? My fee was the exclusive rights to the story. Now that is completely accurate. That's just what happened. So there's a whole bunch of things involved. Number one, I would tell you that sometimes if you analyze a funny story, you damage it. You ruin it. It really, you shouldn't do that. It's like...
Let it rest.
leave well enough alone. There's a time to be quiet and to leave well enough alone. But there is a moral. And the moral was that there was litigation brewing. And the vet knew he had done wrong. The vet knew he had malpracticed. Obviously, it leads you back to the fact that the cat probably did have a heart attack while it was being groomed. And he was afraid of a malpractice case. He froze the cat because he didn't want my client to be able to have an autopsy to find out that the heart had failed and then sue him. He reported it to his malpractice insurance company because the attorney at the trial and who had filed the motion was an insurance defense counsel. So that was his malpractice carrier coming in. So it was really a case of veterinary malpractice. And it's similar to medical malpractice. Most doctors like to bury their mistakes, hospitals in particular. Like that. What about destroying the evidence or changing the records? If you really want to see where this story leads, it leads into medical malpractice and legal malpractice. And I used to defend doctors, and the first thing I would tell them is, don't change your records. They always love to copy over the records and change a few words here and there to make themselves look good. And a good lawyer finds out that the doctor has done that. And then the doctor is in deep trouble.
It's the end
deep
of trouble.
Just leave your, don't mess with your records. Leave them alone. Don't do anything. Whatever they are, you can explain them, but do not change them. Number two, destroying evidence. I could go for about 5 hours on the destruction of evidence, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. The doctor destroyed evidence here. He tampered with the evidence. And if that ever came out, he could be subject. If this woman hadn't been indifferent to money and not want to spend the rest of her life in court, it was a $1 million potential case because he destroyed evidence. He denied everything. And a jury doesn't like that. And you can get exemplary damages for tampering with evidence. like tampering with witnesses.
You know, so exemplary damage.
That's punitive. That means that you can find out how much they're worth and go for a lot of money.
In other words, it's not damages for what the actual thing
emotional
was.
Yeah. Upset. And they can, and also to teach them a lesson and others to make an example of them, like Manafort. They say they want him to do 20 years in jail to make an example so that other people won't do what he did. That's part of the recommendation for the sentencing. So the first thing the insurance company does is say, deny, deny, deny. Who does that remind you of? Deny, deny, deny. We have a president that believes that. No apologies. President that believes that. No admissions. This is what insurance...
Well, apology is almost an admission.
Right. Yeah. So the reason they didn't take the phone calls and say we're sorry and have the doctor talk to her is the insurance company was telling Dr. Wasserman what to do or not do. That's what... That explains it all. But people didn't understand. My client didn't understand it. And I was ticked off because when he is a lawyer calling him. You're really shaking, thinking malpractice. But I wasn't doing... I just wanted him to say I'm sorry. But he didn't realize that there are a lot of people that don't want money. They just want you to say, I'm sorry. That's all. So anyhow, this is what the case was really about. I'll tell you about evidence, spoilage of evidence. Doctors do it all the time. An x-ray that is damaging or damning to them suddenly disappears. The doctor misses something on the x-ray. The dentist who takes your x-ray and there's a tumor in your jaw that he didn't see that shows up on the x-ray. Suddenly the x-ray is gone. Large corporations have a way of storing material in warehouses, then they don't know where they are, and then you find out that it's in some remote place in New Jersey, and then you go up to New Jersey to get it, and now it's being stored in Scotland. You go to Scotland to get it, now it's in Germany, and then from Germany it goes to Switzerland, and in Switzerland, just when the court says produce it, there's a big fire and it's all destroyed. And that actually happened to me. Nowadays, the courts don't let that go by. In the old days, they said, too bad, but nowadays, when you're involved with spoilage, and you are obligated to produce the evidence and maintain records in your computer, and if you destroy them, when you know that there could be a possible claim involving them, it's at your own risk, not the person that's claiming. And that's how they changed the law, because people were just destroying the records.
You know, you've mentioned something that I've always been curious about and noticed when it comes to doctors and such, and x-rays. There's never... I feel that my information, my x-rays, my medical records don't belong to me. They're never shared. They're never like, oh, here's a car. You know, like you go get your car fixed. You get a receipt that tells, well, we did this, this, and this. You don't get that from the doctor. You don't get a copy of the x-rays.
You can if you ask for it.
That's the thing. How they figure it out.
All you have to do is ask for it. And most of the time, because of the computer situation, they can actually send you x-rays, MRI studies, conclusions. All your records are yours, and they're all available to you. And it's federal law, and the doctors know it.
But they don't openly do that because...
They don't want to do that for a lot of reasons. They don't want you to see a lot of stuff, too. They don't want somebody to say there was a misdiagnosis or the wrong medication was prescribed or the wrong dosage was prescribed. You have to remember that a doctor is not a computer, and that is a lot of discretion, and the brain of a doctor functions in many, many ways. There's a lot of subtleties going on. And then there are undercurrents, too, about influences on the type of treatment and the doctor's relationship with drug companies, with medical supply companies, with equipment companies, with MRI companies, with surgery centers, and so forth. Most of the time, though, the doctor will give you the records that you want. All you have to do is ask. Okay?
Okay.
So that's quite a story.
Quite a story.
Yeah, it is. It is. And absolutely true story.